This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 8th of May 2015. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 8th of May, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: landlords claiming millions in benefits, teenager eager to cast her vote, and will garage sell for over £20,000? So may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki?
Which is landlords claiming millions in benefits. Landlords in Hampshire are claiming millions of pounds in housing benefits, according to new figures. Research by the GMB union shows that the top 20 landlords in the county received 3.1 million in housing benefits over the space of 1 year, but many were charities putting proceeds back into services. Winchester Housing Trust and Winchester Church's Night Shelter were among Hampshire's 20 highest earners in 2013-14, receiving £72,744 and £71,758 respectively. The landlords, including private businessmen and companies, received tenants' benefits directly from the government's £23.7 billion pound housing benefit budget. Leanne Smith, chief executive of Winchester Housing Trust, said yesterday, "We're a not-for-profit registered charity. Obviously, our residents are listed with Winchester City Council, so there's no profiteering from our point of view. We provide affordable social housing in Winchester. As long as you don't get private landlords profiteering from housing benefit, that's a different matter." Disability charity, the Enham Trust, received the most money in South and Central Hampshire, being directly paid more than £500,000 in taxpayers' cash, according to the figures. The GMB union, which compiled the data from Freedom of Information requests, says more than £9 billion in housing benefits went to private landlords in 2013-14. Paul Kenny, General Secretary, said, "We see taxpayers' cash subsidising buy-to-let empires with £9.2 billion of hard-earned taxpayers' cash paid into private landlords' bank accounts, much of it ending up in tax havens. The abuse of housing benefit by private landlords has gone on for too long. Millionaires take sackloads of cash for exploiting those in housing need or stuck on low pay." Jonathan Isby, chief executive of the Taxpayers' Alliance, said, "The reason so much is paid in housing benefit to private landlords is that house prices are too expensive, the result of planning restrictions that have strangled the supply we so desperately need. It's also crucial that we flatten housing benefit in the most expensive areas, so that individuals living in expensive council properties do not cost taxpayers over the odds." But Ms. Smith was hesitant to make a connection between housing supply and the benefits bill. She said, "We've got housing benefit on one hand, and whether that decreases the amount of new houses coming forward is difficult to say. We look at the Winchester City Council waiting list, and it's clear we're not providing as much housing to meet the demand at the moment. There has to be more affordable housing in Winchester."
Teenager eager to cast her vote. One Winchester teenager is wasting no time in voting at the general election. Alexandra Jones Navarro turns 18 today, and her day will start with a trip to the polling station in Hairstock. Having cast her vote, she will travel on to Peter Simmons College for lessons and celebrations with friends. Pictured here with friends Emily Platt, 18, and Tamsin Foster, 17, all former pupils at the Westgate School, she's looking forward to having her say through the ballot box. "It's important to have your say about what happens in the future," she says. "If you're fortunate enough to be able to vote, why would you waste the opportunity?" The polling stations opened at 7 a.m. and will close at 10 p.m. The count will be at the River Park Leisure Centre, with the Winchester and Mearne Valley results expected at around 4 a.m. to 5 a.m. tomorrow.
Will Gerrard sell for over £20,000? Another resident garage in the centre of Winchester is set to go under the hammer today, just a few weeks after another sold for a record price. The guided leasehold for Lockup A at the rear of 6 to 7 Cranworth Road, Fulford, is on sale at £15,000 to £20,000 after Garage H recently sold for £23,000, £8,000 above the estimate. It is one of 17 lots being sold by auctioneers Clive Empson at the Aegeus Bowl today. Auctioneer Rob Marchant said, a similar garage in the same block last month sold in auction for £23,000 because of its proximity to the railway station, given the parking issues in the Cathedral City. We anticipate that bidders will be voting with their wallets on auction day, which coincides with the general election. There's also a new dimension to this auction and future ones. We anticipate keen interest from bidders aged 55 or over, who arrive flushed with their newly released pensions pot, following what is thought to be the largest revolution in people's personal finances in decades. One person told me he's looking to free up some of the money for a buy-to-let property through our auction.
Thank you. That concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters, historical items, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum, and then we'll do the announcements and what's on. So we start with the death announcements for the 8th of May. Boast. George Boast died peacefully at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 24th of April. Clowes. Ronald James Clowes died peacefully at home, aged 83. Forsyth. Jean Forsyth died peacefully on the 27th of April, aged 81. Lemon. Brenda Mary Lemon, on the 28th of April, aged 95. Lewis. Diana Amy Lewis, peacefully on the 29th of April, aged 97. Luca. Louise Victoria Jane Luca, died unexpectedly in hospital, aged 54. Maloney. Pat Maloney, he died on the 26th of April, aged 74. North, Nigel North, died suddenly on the 26th of April, aged 57. And Smith, Thomas Hamilton Smith, died peacefully at the Valley Lodge care home. And now we move on to Christian comment, which is going to be read by Albie.
And Christian comment today from Rosemary A. Baker under the heading Critical. Critical is the name of one of the many television programmes on at the moment looking at emergency medicine. They're usually American and take us through the amazing things that can be done to save lives when the odds are apparently stacked against this happening. Today is the general election, when the leaders of the main political parties will be hoping for the critical mass that makes the difference between winning and losing. The same holds true, of course, for our local elections being held at the same time. We should all have had to use our critical appraisal skills to carefully and systematically examine the various manifestos to judge their trustworthiness, their value and relevance for ourselves and our country or locality. Some, though, will not vote, or will vote as they always have done, possibly as their parents did before them. I wonder how we will have weighed up what each party said about our health care. I confess to a slight vested interest here, but same could be said for education and other public services, I'm sure. As someone who works in mental health, things look dire at the moment. Physical health service say the same, but the service my sister had in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital last Friday was Rolls-Royce compared to that our mother received a few years ago. It may have cost more, but the setup was very different and the key elements were the same. We do have to be prepared to do things differently. Overall, though, we spend less on health than other developed countries. Our use overall of critical resources might also need examining, food being a good example. So much is wasted, while many go hungry. At work, I have just completed a 360-degree appraisal. This involved a questionnaire being sent out to colleagues, patients and carers, and then being analysed anonymously. I'm pleased to say that the results and comments were on the whole very good, with one exception. This person was critical of my being critical of some things the Trust asked us to do. The idea of it being 360 is that all the facets of my work and personality can be put together as a whole. Criticism can be both positive and negative. Indeed, the major dictionaries define it as including both, but we do tend to see only the negative, as it is, in my opinion, wrongly defined in some. Our religious and spiritual lives can also be critically appraised, both from an individual, denominational, and church perspective. This too can be critical for our well-being.
Thank you. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, I think you've got the first one.
And this is from Martin Wilson. Many questions on procurement. Sir, speak to any number of councillors about the Silver Hill Review and they will tell that they want it to openly report why the City Council got it so wrong at the judicial review earlier this year before the Council decides if and how it might go ahead with Henderson or with anyone else. Speak to the leader of the Council, and if you can cut through the corporate nonsense, you will hear a different answer. He's determined to give the current developer all the help he can to try to help push things through at breakneck speed. The reason for the rush is certainly unclear. The ostrich mode he adopts is unwelcome. If he is unable to take on the thoughts and wishes of the majority of people who actually live in the city, he is simply not fit to lead. In short, nothing should be done until the review is complete. We deserve answers. Along with Silver Hill, there are serious questions relating to procurement on other major council contracts. River Park Leisure Centre, one of the most profitable facilities in the country, will not have been put out for tender for over 32 years when it comes up for renewal. The refuse collection contract is far from a good deal. This council needs to come clean and start to provide the transparency that we are entitled. Much will depend upon today's elections, quite possibly the entire future of the whole city, so let's hope it returns the thinkers and those who genuinely care about the city, rather than weak individuals and the bureaucrats who seem to have a completely different agenda. We deserve a leader willing to sort the mess out and ask questions, not one that is happy to simply bury his head and support those that have failed the community so badly. And that was from Martin Wilson, The Square, Winchester.
Station's watercress came from Dorset. Sir, it was good to see the bunches of long-life watercress on sale in the West Country Buffet at Alsford Station on the Watercress Line. Pity it came from Dorchester, Dorset. This is from Terry Bond, Archers Road, Eastleigh.
And the next letter from David Selby of West Hill Road North, South Wanston, under the heading Public Transport in Need of Investment. Sir, it was most interesting to learn recently that a new railway station is being built at Reading, complete with a new bus station. Winchester, a city, and the county town of Hampshire, does not have such an interchange. And as I understand it, the city council, in its infinite wisdom, has chosen not even to consider the construction of a new bus station, despite making £6 million a year profit on car parking. Winchester City Council still has two options available. Firstly, to replace the existing bus station in the Silver Hill development, as proposed in the 2009 planning agreement, or secondly, to construct a multi-transport interchange as part of the proposals for the future development of the area adjacent to the railway station. It is a lame excuse to say that Stagecoach would not pay for it, as it is a civic responsibility to make such provision, and at the same time encourage competition in the bus industry to challenge the near-monopoly position of the Stagecoach company. Two factors coming together should bear heavily on the debate. Firstly, and most immediately, along with other cities, we have a vehicle pollution problem, which will not be solved by trying to provide more car parks. Secondly, the population is ageing rapidly, and this points to the provision of a better and more efficient public transport system, as an increasing number of older people are choosing not to use their cars. It would be interesting to know how many city and county councillors use public transport on a regular basis. If they did, they would know how uncomfortable it is to stand under the inadequate shelters that exist in the town in the wet and the wind, often both at the same time. This was the best that Henderson could offer in its revised plan for Silver Hill, with roadside bus stops in Broadway and Friarsgate, the antithesis of an interchange. Better facilities for the users of public transport are an investment for the next 50 years.
And this from Keith Story, St Cross Road. Good consultants are highly valuable. Sir, recent letters to the Chronicle have criticised councils over the use of outside consultants and questioned their value. Why, it is asked, can't highly paid in-house managers supply the necessary information? Tim Bittleston's letter, Chronicle April 16, suggested that the private sector would consider such expense as a sure sign of incompetence. As someone who has acted as a consultant to government departments and the private sector, I must point out some facts concerning the value of the right consultants. Most of my expertise concerned protecting people and property in various situations internationally. What value do you put on my developing protocols to reduce the risk of passenger aircraft crashing? What value do you put on my developing methods to reduce morbidity and death in hospitals? In one case, I was called in because a major hospital was threatened with losing its license to operate because of high infection levels. I solved their problems and they kept their license. Even major private organisations cannot employ staff qualified to deal with every situation which arises. Sometimes they need help fast, like the multinational pharmaceutical company, where a fire in a major computer not only cost them $1 million for a new computer, but also lost data and operational losses. They needed someone who could tell them how to stop it happening again. There was also the director of a well-funded New York museum, who called me in because its multi-million dollar art collection had suffered losses and was at further risk. He was so desperate that when I flew in and met him, he immediately said, "Money is no object, just help us." Even more desperate was a major US corporation facing a lawsuit alleging a product fault. I developed evidence to destroy the plaintiff's case, and my client won a convincing court victory. 200 similar cases awaiting the outcome were withdrawn, saving a lot of my client's money and court time. So don't judge councils too hastily for using consultants, because the right consultants can save a lot of taxpayers' money if their advice is taken. And that's from Keith Story, St Cross Road, Winchester.
And this letter is from Tim Knowles, living in Frizzington, Cumbria. Beautiful county is being destroyed. Sir, John Arlott would be turning in his grave if he could see how our county has progressively moved towards becoming a giant suburban sprawl with few new buildings of any merit and little thought given to maintaining its once wonderful environment and quality of life. I'm a born and bred Hampshire man who has spent much of his life in the far north of England, but whose family all live in Romsey. In recent times, visits back to my boyhood home have become more and more depressing because of the dreadful decisions being taken over planning and development in southern Hampshire. The plague of new houses, which either have destroyed or are destroying so many of our villages, towns and cities, are progressively repeating the dreadful mistakes made during the appalling London overspill planning initiatives, which ruined the character and attractiveness of places like Basingstoke and Andover. The lack of care and sympathy for what traditional Hampshire life and values used to be is a disgrace, and the frequent destruction of wildlife habitats and community facilities by greedy landowners abetted by those supposedly meant to be the guardians of those communities is frankly shocking. Winchester used to be a beautiful and peaceful small city focused on its civil, military and religious heritage, the local point for our rural communities. Romsey, with its stunning abbey and the once responsible patrician influence of Broadlands, was unique. These wonderful places, along with villages like Ampfield, are being strangled by developments which local people dread and which will overpower local services. I hope the people of Hampshire wake up, see what is happening to the county, and force their politicians to call a halt to this dreadful development virus, which is destroying a once supremely beautiful county. Tim Knowles, Cumbria.
And our third letter from Jenny Mallett, the branch organiser of Hants and Isle of Wight Butterfly Conservation. Under the heading, "Please come to see magnificent display." Sir, in reply to the letter, Chronicle, April 23rd, from Pat Young, I write to let you know that the responsibility for the cowslip display along the Alsford Road lies with Butterfly Conservation and Hampshire County Council. The field is owned by the County Council and is part of the Magdalen Hill Down Butterfly Reserve, which is looked after by Butterfly Conservation. Our reserve's officer, Jane Chapman, manages the 120-acre reserve with help from a small army of willing volunteers and by carefully controlled grazing with sheep and cattle. There is open access all year round with entrances for walkers beside Magdalen Cemetery and opposite St Swithin's School. During the summer, there is a magnificent display of other wild flowers and 30 species of butterfly can be seen. So please pay a visit, but do keep your dog on a lead, as there are sheep on other areas of the down, and many skylarks are nesting among the cowslips. And that letter comes with a photograph of Magdalen Hill, the long green grass, and a host of golden cowslips.
Thank you. That concludes the letter. So now we step back in time, 200 years, I think, Nikki.
May the 8th, 1815. At Monday last at Cheriton, near Alsford, the usual pastime of maying commenced, where a maypole was erected in commemoration of the day, and in the afternoon the sons and daughters of May, dressed in a very appropriate manner for the occasion, accompanied by a band of music, proceeded to a commodious bower, erected for dancing. It was attended by upwards of 50 couple of the most respectable people in the neighbourhood, till the evening. This festive amusement was repeated the next day, with the same order, and if possible, with greater spirit.
May the 8th, 1915. Meaning of the word sandbag. It is doubtful whether anyone not actually in the field at all realises what the word sandbag means to the soldier in the firing line, and how urgently millions and yet more millions of sandbags are needed to stem the casualty lists. With 1 million men in the field, 10 million sandbags will only mean 10 bags per man, and new bags are needed as fast as they move. The supply required is endless. The bags are made of Hessian jute. Each bag, when finished, should measure 33 inches by 14 inches. One side and one end need no stitching. Empty bags may be sent to Miss Tyler, Linden House, Highgate Road, Northwest, who dispatches them without delay to the fighting line. A specimen sandbag can be seen at the Hampshire Chronicle office.
And 50 years ago, May the 8th, 1965. Filling station plans discussed. The need for a full-scale filling station and repair garage at Bishop's Waltham was put forward at a planning inquiry on Tuesday as a reason for developing the site of Newtown's Cycle and Motor Works. The inquiry was into the refusal of the Hampshire Planning Authority to permit Church Hill Construction Company Limited to build a petrol filling station with showroom, offices and repair workshops on the site in Station Road, Newtown. The first objection to the scheme was that the proposals would be detrimental to the amenities of an otherwise mainly residential area.
And 25 years ago, May the 4th, 1990, another similar story, service station expansion. Plans to expand the Pitt Vale service station near Winchester will go ahead despite strong objections from the city's planning department. The planning committee's viewing subcommittee visited the service station by the Romsey Road and Badger Farm Road roundabout and concluded that the development would be acceptable as long as the landscaping was deemed satisfactory before the building was occupied. The proposal is to replace the existing forecourt shop and cash point with a larger building set further back and to construct a new workshop with offices underneath. And there's a second item. Hampshire's first new railway station for 24 years in the borough of Eastleigh at Hedge End will be opened next Wednesday, May the 9th, in front of guests including the Secretary of State for Transport, Mr. Cecil Parkinson. The new station, the first in the county since 1966, will be opened by Eastleigh's Mayor, Mr. Edwin Perry, and the new British Rail Chairman, Mr. Bob Reed, watched by about 100 schoolchildren and special guests. The ceremony takes place at 11:40 and Network South East say they are inviting Hedge End residents to go along. Mr. Parkinson will also be launching Solent Link electrical services in a ceremony at Fareham Station. Now we move on to Chronicle comment, and I think this relates to much of the election. Of course, as we're recording this, we still don't know the result for the local elections or indeed the local parliamentary ones. Nikki.
Chronic problem of housing highlighted. Two different stories in today's Hampshire Chronicle, but both illustrate the chronic problem of housing in Winchester. The front page story highlights the amount of public money that supports vulnerable people who need to be housed. The other is about an auction today of a domestic garage in full flood for an estimated £20,000. The garage is likely to fetch such an inflated sum because of the soaring demand for a parking space caused by the rising number of households being crammed into the city centre. The basic law of supply and demand comes into play. When things are scarce, their value increases. That is why rents are rising. The root cause is a lack of house building. Whichever party or parties takes power after today's general election has to grasp the nettle. The country goes to the polls today in national and local elections. This paper urges everyone to vote. Conservative candidate Steve Bryan has printed a leaflet, including a seeming endorsement from the ex-editor of this newspaper that is a year old. No one should infer any support for any party from this newspaper. The Chronicle takes pride in its political neutrality.
Thank you. Now we have first person, Tony.
First person, Khalid Aziz. The people have spoken, listen to them. If you're reading this on Hampshire Chronicle's publication day, the chances are you have already or are just about to vote. I cast mine some days ago by post, having been spurred to postal arrangements, having been abroad and missed voting in the Winchester constituency during the famous tussle in 1997 between Messrs. Oughton and Malone, resulting in a majority of just 2 votes for Mr. Oughton after several recounts, and then a High Court decision to run the election again. Second time round, the people of Winchester, not taking kindly to what they presumably perceived as Mr. Malone's poor sportsmanship, left the world in no doubt by increasing Mr. Oughton's majority to more than 20,000. As I write, the pollsters and bookies are forecasting a very narrow result, so it could be that even if you're reading this several days after publication, the outcome in terms of who governs Britain is still uncertain. What is certain is that this has been the grumpiest election I can remember. Not one political leader has covered themselves with much glory. Both the major parties have hired, at some expense, election gurus who allegedly know exactly how to bend the electorate to the will of their masters, despite in some cases being more used to the politics on the other side of the Atlantic. As you read this, some of those masters must surely be considering asking for their money back. Whatever the outcome, we have become, as a country, both bored and riven by the run-up to election. Trite and unnecessary phrases have been repeated time and time again as leaders seek to breathe new life into hackneyed utterances. Listening to some interviews, you could almost mouth the words along with the politicians. It would be good to think we've heard the last of hard-working families, code for what used to be called working class. I want to be clear on this, code for anything but clarity. Or be bolder, code for new, more left wing, but I doubt it. In their desperation to move the dial of public opinion, politicians have become more and more extreme with hyperbolic promise that, that look impressive, it look impossible to keep. All of them acknowledge that public opinion is at an all-time low when it comes to the political classes, but acknowledgement is not enough. They need to walk the talk, and they've singularly failed to do that, instead pouring stronger and stronger vitriol onto their opponents, which we the people hate to see. So, here's a plea. Whoever ends up in government should recognise they've just squeaked in. There has never been a time when governing for all the people is so important. The country still has a long way to go to climb out of the worst recession for a century. So bin the divisive rhetoric and start to heal the nation. As American political guru Dick Tuck famously said, "The people have spoken, the bastards. Listen to them."
Thank you. Now we move on to Belgarum with 3 items, I think, Albie.
Yes, there are 3 items from Belgarum. And the first comes with a photograph of the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, being ensconced in the stocks at her medieval banquet. And there she is, head and hands in the stocks, and the top part of the stock being placed around her neck. And she looks a bit apprehensive, but very sportingly having a go. It comes under the heading, "Mayor put in the stocks at medieval banquet." As Winchester goes to the polls today, this picture serves as a reminder to our Westminster hopefuls that politics was a tougher business in the Middle Ages. Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Eileen Berry, was put in the stocks and pelted with sponges at the close of her medieval banquet at the Great Hall. Though the sponges were squeezed out to the point of almost total dryness, Belgarum commends Councillor Berry for being a good sport and wonders whether such rituals could be revived at tonight's election count. Our second item comes under the heading Surprise Trips Up Potential Voter. Winchester constituency resident Sarah Claridge is registered to vote and wants to vote, but can't, because her husband is suddenly sending her on a surprise trip to mark her birthday. On being told she was going away for a week from Monday, the 47-year-old rang Winchester City Council in an attempt to register for her husband Dominic to vote by proxy for her. After ringing three times without anyone calling her back, she was eventually told that this would have been possible had her journey abroad been either business or health-related. Mother of two, Mrs. Claridge, who lives in the village of Easton, is now furious that she will be unable to have her say in this week's general election. When I finally get to speak to the right person, they insisted that it would have been possible for me to still vote if I was going away at short notice for business, but not if it was merely a matter of my husband being extremely generous. When we lived in Australia, people were fined for not voting. Now I want to vote, am entitled to vote, but can't, because my trip doesn't fall into the right category. And the third and final item, historic cottage hit by slow planning process. An historic cottage in Winters Hill is being left to crumble by hold-ups in Winchester's planning process, a concerned resident has said. Mac Wood lives near Tollgate Cottage and has written to Belgarum to question planning strictures which he says have left it in a, quote, sorry state, close quotes, despite its listing in the Hampshire Treasures Archive. He said, "It seems a shame to see this historic building fall down because of a hold-up in the Winchester planning system, as I understand from the owners that they have previously applied to restore and extend the cottage several times and have been refused planning permission on each application. Records show a number of failed bids to extend or rebuild on site since the turn of the century. Belgarum commends the last successful applicants who won the right to extend the lounge back in 1975. Mr. Wood has also suggested the building be restored by Upham Brewery as part of its controversial bid to relocate to green fields outside Bishop's Waltham."
Thank you, Albie. Now we move on to the What's On feature. And firstly, we've got concerts. In Winchester Cathedral, there's an evening organ recital on Tuesday the 12th of May at 7:45 p.m. Tickets cost £8, but that includes a glass of wine or fruit juice and can be obtained from the Cathedral box office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And there's also a concert in Romsey Abbey. They host the City of Southampton Orchestra on Saturday the 16th of May at 7:30 p.m. For more information, you can contact the tourist office in Romsey on 01794 512 987. That's 01794 512 987. There's three theatre entries this week. The Theatre Royal Winchester has The Witches of Eastwick playing from the 13th to the 16th of May at 7:30 p.m. with a matinee on Saturday. I'm sorry, I haven't listed the Theatre Royal box office number. If I remember it rightly, it's 01962 840440. I hope that's right. The Chesil Theatre has The Quartet playing from Saturday the 16th of May to Saturday the 23rd of May at 7:45, and the matinee is on Saturday the 23rd. For details of the tickets from the Chesil Theatre, telephone 07527 471 539. That's 07527 471 539. And finally, the Mayflower Southampton has Top Hat playing from the 12th to the 23rd of May at 7:30 p.m. with matinees on Wednesdays, Thursdays and Saturday. The Mayflower can be contacted on 02380 711 811. That's 02380 711 811. A lighting up time ends Friday the 8th of May at 5:27 a.m. and begins at 8:38 p.m. And next Wednesday the 13th of May it ends at 5:19 a.m. and begins at 8:45 p.m. And if you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki.
And this is headed, Harriet feels a cut above after charity chop. A Winchester shop worker has said goodbye to nearly 11 inches of hair so that it can be made into wigs for sick children. Harriet France, who works at Jeremy France Jewellers in the High Street, turned to celebrity hairdresser Guy Kramer to cut her hair into little pixie crop on Thursday in aid of the Little Princess Trust. The charity makes real hair wigs for children across the UK and Ireland who have lost their hair, who've lost their own hair to cancer treatment. Miss France said, I'm feeling really good. It's such a transformation. It made me laugh when I went to the bathroom for the first time and saw my reflection. I cannot believe how generous people have been. It's quite phenomenal. She's raised around £1,800 so far with the help of a £350 donation from her father, Jeremy France. Guy Kramer said he was delighted to do his bit. We have lots of clients who have suffered cancer and we do their wigs for them, he said. It's nice to be able to cut someone's hair to make the wigs. I feel very privileged to be part of it and delighted that I could help. The Little Princess Trust is a wonderful charity and there is a way to donate, but it's online. You go to justgiving.com/Harriet-France. And there's some wonderful photographs of Harriet France having her hair cut short in aid of the Little Princess Trust. She's pictured with, from left, brother Christopher France, mum Sarah France, Guy Kramer and her boyfriend Michael Tsang. And he's holding up the scissors behind her. Everyone's smiling away. And I have to say, she looks wonderful with her short hair. And just below it is a picture of Guy preparing to take the scissors to Harriet's lovely, long, brown hair. And he's holding it up for us all to see. She does look better with it cut. So well done her.
Winchester runners make marathon effort. There was a great turnout of Winchester and District runners at this year's Virgin London Marathon. Pride of place went to Toby Lambert, who ran a magnificent time of 2 hours, 21 minutes, 31 seconds after storming through halfway in 1 hour, 8 minutes. The next runners in the black and gold vests to finish were George King in a fine 2 hours, 40 minutes, 24 seconds, club stalwart Ian Berry in 2 hours, 49 minutes, 27 seconds, and a marathon first-timer, Pete Sansom, in an impressive 2 hours, 55 minutes, 6 seconds. The first lady finisher was Karen Rushton, who performed superbly to beat the 3-hour barrier in 2 hours, 59 minutes, 18 seconds.
Solar farm put on hold by pickles. A scheme to build one of the biggest solar farms in the heart of the Hampshire countryside has been put on hold. The Secretary of State for Communities and Local Government, Eric Pickles, has stepped into the row over the scheme near Stockbridge. It came hours after Test Valley councillors gave German green energy giant Kronos the thumbs up last week to build a scaled-down version of the company's more contentious scheme to put 225,456 solar panels on agricultural fields at, on agricultural lands at Evely Farm in Horton. The decision came despite planning officers recommending the scheme be turned down. Mr. Pickles placed a holding direction on the application, preventing Kronos from going ahead with the proposal until he decides whether or not to call the application in and make a decision on the plans himself. It had been welcomed by protesters who thought they'd lost their battle to stop the project for 185,472 panels going ahead. Alan Jostling from Broughton against Kronos Solar said, "We maintain our strong opposition to this proposal, especially given that Kronos has succeeded in rushing through this application." A public inquiry was due to be held on the 13th of May into the original 225,456 panel scheme rejected by Test Valley councillors last year, but Kronos agreed to drop the appeal after getting permission when councillors agreed that the project would benefit the environment and help reduce the impacts of climate change. Speakers from Broughton Parish Council and Broughton Pro Solar Group spoke in favour of the application, which has the support of more than 600 people. Kronos Managing Director Alexander Arkesh said, "The scheme covers around 150 acres, is 32 acres less than the original, and would generate enough energy to power 12,500 homes." Kronos was unaware of Eric Pickles' holding direction until informed by the press and did not provide comment.
New general manager takes the helm at Leinston House. A prestigious hotel near Winchester has appointed a new general manager. Gaius Winkle joined Leinston House last month, bringing with him over 20 years of experience. Most recently, he completed a 12-year tenure at McDonald Hotels, working his way through the ranks to general manager at the Complete Angler in Marlow. Danny Pecorelli, managing director, said, "Providing the highest levels of service to our guests is our number one priority, and with his vast experience and dedication to hotel management, Gaius is ideally placed to lead the hotel forward. This is a hugely exciting time for Leinston House, particularly with the launch of Season, our new all-on-site luxury cookery school this summer, and we are delighted to welcome Gaius." Mr. Winkle added, "I'm delighted to be joining the exclusive hotels and venues family, having followed their journey through the industry for many years. With so many exciting developments in the pipeline of both Leinston House and across the wider group, my appointment couldn't have been better timed. And there's a beautiful picture of Leinston House with the striped lawn surrounded by climbing roses and flowers and the blue sky behind, and a very smiling Gaius Winkle."
Cheriton Fete. Hundreds poured onto the recreation ground near Alsford last weekend for one of the first village fetes of 2015. The clouds looked threatening, but the rain held off in Cheriton for fun, games, a barbecue, and the popular toy duck race on the River Itchen. Tea and cake was served in the village hall, while the scenic green played host to a range of traditional fairground games, including a coconut shy. Meanwhile, a raffle helped raise money towards maintaining the recreation ground. Organisers have yet to count the donations, but hope to beat their record of over £4,000. "With the recreation ground, we need at least that sort of funding to just stand still, because there's a hefty insurance premium every year," said Francis Hamilton. "I think it went well. The weather held out for us with no rain, and local people did turn out well. A lot of work and effort goes into keeping the recreation ground nice. That sort of money just keeps us ticking over."
Brewers raise a glass after a year in business. Winchester Brewers have toasted Bottoms Up, celebrating a year in business. Andy Mansell and Ian McIntosh opened Red Cat Brewing last April 11th and have gone on to create a range of cask and bottled ales, now producing 6,300 pints a week and taking on worker Ben Jackson full-time. It is fast becoming one of Hampshire's busiest breweries, supplying over 120 pubs across the south with its seven ales. It has even gone on to win two awards for Mr. M's Porter, which saw them take home Beer of the Festival at the Salisbury Winterfest in January. The Tipple also awarded them with runner-up at Hampshire Oktoberfest last year. Based at Sun Valley Business Park, Winnall, ales can also be bought bottled on-site or consumed at the licensed bar. Head brewer Mr. Mansell said, "Craft ale has come a long way in the past 50 years, but with so many beers on the market, it's still a rare treat to find that perfect pint. When we launched a year ago, our defining mantra was that we don't do boring. And whilst we're hugely proud of the range of beers that we have developed, we'll never pussyfoot around as we continue our work to create a fabulous range of beers." And there is Andy Mansell, Ian McIntosh, and full-time worker Ben Jackson, all each with a pint of brew in their hands, sitting on their casks of beer and looking very happy at the progress they've made. Also, there's Red Cat Prowler popping up behind Ben Jackson.
Revamped post office and store set to open. The final licks of paint are being added to a Meon Valley village shop undergoing a £30,000 revamp. Meon Stoke Post Office and Village Stores is set to relaunch on Saturday with a new bakery, more local produce, disabled access, cafe seating and more. Major building works were funded from nearly £30,000 from Hampshire County Council's Village Shops Grant and the Post Office Community Fund. Owner Nell Gibson, a former nurse who took over the Warnford Road business last year, said village shops are essential to rural communities and must survive current struggles. "Being at the heart of the community is very important," she said. "Going the extra mile for customers is important for them. We're not able to compete with the likes of Tesco, and so it's important to provide something else that people want. All the elderly people who come in, it's the only sociable thing they get to have. They stand around chatting for ages, and that's why we're putting some tables and chairs out the front to give it a cafe feel." Two resident wheelchair users will cut the ribbon at 10 a.m. on Saturday, followed by free samples from local food suppliers. And there's a lovely picture of Nell Gibson outside the new post office, all revamped, probably with her two children, and it's a very good shop.
Plans for 50 new homes revealed. A developer is one step closer to submitting its planning applications for new homes in a village near Winchester. HAB Housing, which was established by Grand Designs presenter Kevin MacLeod, has said it will shortly be sending city planners the plan for 50 homes on land off Loveden Lane in Kingsworthy. There will be 6 one-bedroom flats, 10 two-bedroomed houses, 14 three-bedroomed houses, 11 four-bedroomed houses and 9 five-bedroomed houses. In an email update, the developer said, "We believe this rich mix can meet a wide range of demand as well as encouraging a vibrant mixed community." The proposals also include allotments, fruit trees and edible planting on communal areas. The email said, "The wider scheme provides the opportunity to double the size of Eversley Park and create a number of shared amenities, which could include ecological grassland meadow, mile-long cycle running and walking track, allotments, and natural children's play area. We have proposed that a significant lump sum be paid to the parish council for future maintenance and/or the provision of additional community amenities." The plans come as part of Winchester City Council's Local Plan Part 2, which requires 250 homes to be built in Kingsworthy until 2031. Last year, the parish council voted to support building off Loveton Lane. HAB Housing's communications and sales director, Simon McWhirter, said, "We are pleased to confirm that we will shortly be submitting a planning application for our proposals at Loveton Lane, following extensive consultation. The scheme delivers a number of benefits for the community, including a high-quality design, affordable housing, and significant amount of public open space."
Mechanical organs on show at Winchester Cathedral Close. Nostalgic fairground tunes filled the air on Bank Holiday Monday as more than a dozen mechanical organs were wheeled into Winchester Cathedral Close. Music boxes, dating back as far as 1878, were displayed, bringing enthusiasts together from across the south to help raise money for restoration of the cathedral's medieval stained glass. Organs, big and small, played traditional songs and modern extracts, such as the theme from hit film Pirates of the Caribbean. Some were shipped from continental Europe, including a 1922 German instrument appearing in Britain for the first time. Alison Beedon, president of the Musical Box Society of Great Britain and a Winchester resident, said, "We've been working towards this for so long that when I saw these two things, main organs, arrive, I knew it wasn't a dream. It's such an emotional thing for me to see them here. I just love the sound of them. It's a very powerful and evocative, nostalgic sound. I really liked going to fairgrounds when I was a child." Dedicated hobbyists from the Musical Box Society, Mechanical Organ Owners Society, Fair Organ Preservation Society, and British Organ Grinders Association were on hand to demonstrate, explain the instrument's histories, and help families learn to play. Among them was Paul McCarthy, a design and technology teacher at King's School. He has built organs for more than 30 years, and previous clients include the Dean of Winchester, the very Reverend James Atwell. He said, "It's not everybody's cup of tea, but it's nice to bring a bit of pleasure to people by playing music and raising money for the cathedral, of course." The Sunday afternoon event encouraged donations to Friends of Winchester Cathedral's window appeal. Their 3,000 members have raised £725,000 to help restore stained glass at the cathedral, and came even closer to their £800,000 target on Monday. Chairman Bruce Parker kicked off the day with a performance on a German Bruder barrel organ, built in 1878. "I'm not sure this music appeals to everybody, but it's quite nice for a bank holiday," he said. "I don't think I'd take one of these home, though." And there's some lovely photographs. One of Gordon Bartlett with an organ that he built himself. And it's quite a massive thing, with a toy monkey on the top, sporting a fez. Gordon himself, has black top hat, red tunic top with yellow gold braid, and a multicoloured and multi-patterned yellow waistcoat. And then there's a colourful fairground organ on a trailer. Must be 15 feet long by about 12 feet high. And a photograph of Ross Longhurst, another hobbyist, with her Seraphone, which is a boxed organ. And there she is in her 1800s dress. Very, very interesting photographs.
Pensioner died after fall, inquest is told. A Winchester pensioner died after falling on the way to the toilet at her care home, an inquest heard. Muriel Jeffrey fractured her pelvis and bruised her head after falling at Flowerdown Care Home, Hairstock Road, on February the 1st. The 86-year-old, a retired civil servant, was independently mobile and had no history of falls, Winchester Coroner's Court was told. But Sharon Tucker, the care home's manager, said that Ms. Jeffrey often resisted treatment for her legs, which had deteriorated in the months leading up to her death. She was quite a determined, strong old lady, Ms. Tucker said. She knew what she wanted and she was often non-compliant with some of her treatment. She didn't feel that there was a problem with her legs and she wouldn't take the antibiotics either. A post-mortem examination revealed that Ms. Jeffrey died from multiple organ failure after the fall. She was taken to Royal Hampshire County Hospital but died on February the 5th. Senior Central Hampshire Coroner Graham Short recorded a verdict of accidental death.
Take That, headline Carfest. Preview, Take That, Carfest South, Laverstoke Park Farm, Overton. Take That have been announced as Sunday night headliners for a Hampshire festival this summer. The band will be appearing at this year's Carfest South. The fundraising festival, which is now in its fourth year, returns to Laverstoke Park Farm in Overton from October the 28th to the 30th. The hugely popular boy band will headline on Sunday, August the 30th. Also performing that day are Bellowhead, Bjorn to Rock, Level 42 and Midge Ure. Friday's lineup includes Jules Holland, Scouting for Girls, the Boomtown Rats, whilst on Saturday musical visitors to the farm will include Paloma Faith, Paul Heaton and Jackie Abbott. C6 Steve, Sophie Ellis Beckstor, Texas, The Feeling, and Ward Thomas. Carfest, which was founded by Chris Evans, has already raised more than $3.5 million for BBC Children in Need. There are still more artists to be confirmed. Find out more online at carfest.org.
Bishop hosts an enlightening event. The Bishop of Winchester has hosted a gathering to explore the contribution Christian universities make to society. The Right Reverend Tim Dakin hosted a higher education colloquium in collaboration with Winchester University on the campus. The keynote address was given by Professor David Ford, Regius Professor of Divinity at Cambridge University. It gave an opportunity for scholars, educational and church leaders to discuss the contribution of Anglican universities to the debate about the purpose of higher education. The Church of England was one of the first providers of education in this country, building primary schools in the 19th century and later establishing secondary schools, teacher training colleges and universities. Winchester University itself started off as a diocesan training college. Nationally, there are 11 universities with an Anglican foundation. The colloquium explored what contribution the Church of England can continue to make in a new era, especially in supporting and shaping higher education into the future. The Bishop of Winchester said, "This has been a stimulating and enlightening event. Higher education is not just about producing graduates who are economically productive. It's also about enabling people to reach their full potential, providing opportunities for cross-disciplinary conversation and study in which to reflect on what it means to live as citizens of the nation and the world. I believe that the Christian worldview and the Anglican tradition has much to offer in this respect."
Shortage of crossing patrol officers. An appeal has been launched to find people to help children get to and from school safely. Hampshire County Council is looking for new school crossing patrol officers and said the vacancies are proving difficult to fill. In Winchester, there are currently jobs listed online for Stanmore Lane, Stockbridge Road and Cheriton Road. There is also one in Whiteley and another in Waltham Chase. A spokesman for the county council said, "We are keen to hear from people in the community who can demonstrate traffic awareness, sense of responsibility, and are keen to show dedication and commitment in carrying out a very important job to make the roads of Hampshire safer for children. The job involves working for approximately an hour in the morning and an hour in the afternoon during turn time, so it would suit someone who is retired, looking to commit for just a few hours a day, or would like something to fit around other commitments."
Police are brought up to speed on rural crime. Police in Hampshire have been brought up to speed on rural crime, NFU members have heard. As part of the four-year police and crime plan produced by Hampshire's Police and Crime Commissioner, Simon Hayes, officers across the county are being trained in rural matters to reduce crime. Through the Rural Policing Strategy and the work of the Rural Policing Board, we established and delivered a training program for frontline police officers to understand what rural crime is, what it looks like, and in some cases, the difference between a hare and a rabbit, Mr. Hayes said. He and Hampshire Constabulary's rural policing lead, Inspector Lou Hubble, explained how police officers had been briefed on relevant legislation relating to prevalent types of rural crime, including poaching. Around 400 police call centre staff who handle reports of crime have also been trained.
Queen's Award for Building Specialist. A Winchester specialist construction company has been presented with the Queen's Award for Enterprise, the United Kingdom's highest accolade for businesses. Lakesmere Group, based in Moorside Road in Winall, is celebrating after being awarded for business excellence in international trade for its performance in the overseas construction market. Its activities have resulted in exports rising from 1% to 30% in turnover. Mark Davey, Lakesmere Group's chief executive officer, said, "I am so pleased and honoured that we have won the Queen's Award for Enterprise. This is fantastic recognition for all our people who have put in so much hard work, innovation and teamwork to make the business so successful. I cannot be more proud of this achievement. Thank you to our loyal clients and supply chain partners who have also made this success possible." Founded in 1993, the company now employs around 900 people, with a current turnover in excess of £100 million. Some of its projects include Portsmouth's Spinnaker Tower and the London Aquatics Centre. A selection of the firm's top managers will attend a reception at Buckingham Palace later this year, where they will be presented with the award by the Queen. And there are two photographs, one of the Aquatic Centre in London and the other of the Spinnaker Tower, both looking absolutely splendid.
Grieving families still awaiting answers. A grieving family must wait until, days before the anniversary of a young Winchester mother's death to find out what happened. Rachel Rocky, 34, was found dead at her home in St Paul's Hill with her nine-month-old son crying upstairs on August 11th last year. An inquest heard that the cause of her death is still unknown, as scientists are yet to test samples of her body fluids to determine whether she suffered an allergic reaction. She was allergic to nuts, but it is not known if she had eaten any in the hours before she collapsed. Professor Andrew Walls, a reader in immunopharmacology based at Southampton General Hospital, said the samples are still awaiting tests due to staff shortages, changes in funding and technical problems. He said research in anaphylaxis is still underfunded and underdeveloped, but he hopes the research will be completed within the next 3 months. Mrs. Rocky's husband, Stephen Rocky, left her when their son was 7 weeks old to live in London where he worked, the inquest heard. The two met at university and had been together for 15 years when he admitted to having an affair. 2 weeks before her death, a letter was sent from his solicitor asking for consideration for a divorce. Mrs. Rocky's mother, Angela Elsie, said the split had put her daughter under stress, and the last time she saw her, she appeared weary and frantic. They had a good life together and good jobs. She told me she thought she had it all and was the luckiest person alive. She added that her world fell apart when her husband left because it was a shock. The inquest heard from Dr. Hayley Burnley, consultant histopathologist at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, who said she was not able to determine an exact cause of death due to toxicology, pathology and histology tests returning negative results. She said Mrs. Rocky's death could have been caused by a sudden arrhythmic death syndrome, thought though she did not rule out anaphylaxis. The inquest was adjourned provisionally until August the 6th, depending on whether test results are available.
Families urged to get out and cycle. A season of family cycle rides returns for a second year in Winchester. Following the successful launch last year, Winchester CTC, the national cycling charity, and VC Venter are organising monthly rides for young families between this month and September. Coordinator Andy Key said, "Our local cycling clubs will be supporting the group with experienced riders who know how to mend a puncture and help out families who do not have a lot of cycling experience. All rides are on quiet country lanes and easy off-road cycle paths. The rides are at an easy pace with plenty of stops en route. Extended families are welcome. All children must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. Each ride starts from a different location within about 10 miles of Winchester, and details are on Winchester CTC's website, winchesterctc.org.uk. The next ride is on Saturday, May the 16th, and will start at 2 p.m. from the YMCA Cafe on the Broadway, Winchester, finishing at about 5 p.m. You can also email familyrides@winchesterctc.org.uk or call 07946 528387 for details. And there's a very nice picture of the Salter family from Winchester cycling through the ford near Ovington.
Event to focus on holistic therapies. An event specialising in holistic therapies is to be held in Winchester, aimed at combating illnesses relating to chronic fatigue. Organised by the Alliance for Fibromyalgia, Myalgic Encephalomyelitis and Chronic Fatigue Syndrome, it aims to create awareness and research into the complex range of illnesses. It will be hosted on Sunday, May 17th at 5050 St Cross Road from 10:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Opal Webster Philp, chairman of the Alliance, said, "The Alliance works in partnership with university professors, the medical profession and research scientists to encourage more biomedical research and understanding. The age range of those living with these, often difficult to diagnose illnesses, is from 2 to 92. It is indiscriminate and often follows a virus, with the body unable to recover. It affects cognitive and mobility functions, loss of strength, with 25% of sufferers bedridden and in need of 24-hour care." He added, "The Wellbeing Fair is an opportunity for us to raise both awareness and much-needed funds and for the public to experience different pathways to regaining health and vitality. We've been so blessed to receive great support from many holistic health professionals who will be offering reduced-rate taster sessions and donating a percentage of the treatment cost to the Alliance, as well as raising funds from the entry fees into the event. Therapies on offer include deep tissue cranial osteopathy, quantum touch and reflexology. Sugar-free and gluten-free refreshments will be on offer, and entry is a £3 donation. For more information, contact a member of the Alliance on 01962 878 803. That's 01962 878 803 or 07718 896 720. Give you that again, 07718 896 720.
Funeral tribute for popular jail officer. More than 200 prison staff, friends and family gathered to pay tribute at the funeral of Paul Applegarth, a popular member of staff at Winchester Jail. Mr. Applegarth had served at the prison for 35 years in a number of roles. An impressive guard of honour lined the route of the cortege as it approached Wessex Vale Crematorium, and prison officers acted as bearers, carrying the coffin into the chapel. Mr. Applegarth, 60, of Orchard Close, Colden Common, was described as a gentle soul, always polite and helpful, with a big heart and a great sense of humour. He had an amazing capacity to calmly pacify and de-escalate the most difficult and confrontational of situations, and is said to have possibly saved the prison millions of pounds in damage to people and property over the years. Mr. Applegarth was known by all for his sense of humour and was deeply respected by officers and prisoners alike. Tributes were paid from members of his family, the prison, and the Jets flyball team, of which he was an active member. He leaves behind his wife, Sarah, also a member of prison staff, and with whom he had worked alongside for 15 years, a daughter, two stepchildren, and two grandchildren. The service was conducted by the Reverend Graham Topping, a former chaplain at the prison, and as a picture of the staff from the Winchester Jail forming a guard of honour, looking very smart in their uniforms, as the cortege approaches, and a very nice picture of Paul Applegarth himself.
Domestic violence support. A group of councillors have agreed they will step up support for those affected by domestic violence in Winchester. Last Wednesday, Councillor Ernie Jeffs, portfolio holder for Communities and Transport, approved recommendations to improve the council's response. It included investigating an increase in the number of Stage 2 supported housing units by a further 10 by looking into locations and funding. The decision notice also said an arrangement between the City Council and Refuge should be arranged. A review of corporate policy for staff, improving education and awareness for frontline staff, setting up a web page detailing helplines, and encouraging Hampshire Police and Crime Commissioner Simon Hayes to commission the expansion of the Independent Domestic Violence Advocate Service at a local level. The Council also wants to support the Winchester Domestic Violence and Abuse Forum by ensuring a room is available for meetings up to 3 times a year. Trinity Winchester has offered a room for free.
Expedition to South Pole to raise awareness on depression. A Bishop's Waltham father of two is continuing to fundraise for a solo expedition to the South Pole to raise awareness about depression. John Dennis has spent the last year preparing for the trip and has just returned from a full-scale expedition in Norway where he spent 16 days covering 175 miles in freezing conditions. He said he had to spend 33 hours bedded in a tent due to horrendous winds. Though tent-bound, it was awesome. It was an awesome experience for the main event, as in Antarctica is constantly windy, so I'll have to deal with it, he said. In January, the 40-year-old completed a 2-week course on safety on ice and how to dress for the cold. A month later, he held a quiz night in Bishop's Waltham, raising £3,400. The expedition and charity share a name, Dare to Express, and the goal to help people rebuild their lives after mental illness. It's a cause close to Mr. Dennis's heart after he was diagnosed with depression in 2013. He is hoping to raise a total of £50,000 and said he's on track for the 45-day expedition starting in November. There will be a fundraiser at the Hilton Hotel at the Aegeus Bowl in West End on October the 9th. And there's a photograph of John during his recent trip to Norway, sitting on his bed in his tent, certainly dressed for the cold, with a heavy coat and woolly hat. But I notice that his hands look rather cold. His gloves are hanging from the roof of the tent.
Children and Volunteers Transform Garden. Children and volunteers have teamed up to decorate a community garden in Winchester. Tucked away behind a row of flats in the 50-metre by 50-metre plot in Firmstone Road, Winnell, has been transformed into a tranquil public space thanks to the Community Garden Group. Winnell Primary School children from years 3 to 6, alongside volunteers from Perlins, a group for adults with learning difficulties, worked with artist Olivia Keith to create willow structures and decorations. Tara Kaki, 11, year 6, said she helped build a shelter for the seating area. "I'm happy to be involved because I have learned that you can make lots of things with willow. The garden is really nice," she said. The garden group, part of the community centre, received a grant from Denplan last year and has since been able to buy a bench and plant more wildflowers and fruit. Andrea Arengo-Jones, a volunteer and artist, said the plan is to grow fruit to make jam, with the proceeds going back into maintaining the garden. She said, "We are hoping that it will now encourage older people to come in, sit down and appreciate it, because it's so quiet here. Although it's right in the heart of Winnell, all you can hear is the bird songs. It's like a little spot of heaven. It's so lovely." The Incredible Edible Food Group also helped at the workshops, and there's a very sweet photograph of about 18 of them, some on the bench, sitting under one of the willow arches that they have made so cleverly.
Pub plans approved by planning officers. An historic Alsford pub has been allowed to be converted into a house without it going before elected councillors. Planning officers have used delegated powers to agree to the Running Horse being revamped into a six-bedroom home. The pub on Pound Hill was one of the oldest in Alsford. Owned by Green King, it closed in July 2013 after the departure of the last tenants, Malk Evans and Hannah Newman. Such drastic changes to pubs would normally go before the Planning Committee of Winchester City Council. Derek Payne, co-chairman of Southern Hampshire branch of the Campaign for Real Ale, said, "I must say I was not aware that the Running Horse had been granted planning permission to be converted into a private dwelling. We knew, of course, that it had closed for some time. We're in the process of drawing up a list of pubs that are in danger of being closed and getting them listed as assets of community value. My view is that pubs should remain as pubs, not converted into anything else. No matter how bad a pub may be, all the time it remains a pub, it can become a better one. Unfortunately, pubcos charge such high rents to their tenants and make them buy stock from who they say that tenants cannot make a living out of them. We're hoping that the pubco reform will start to make a difference." Other pub conversions have also gone through without going to committee, including the conversion of the Ship on Wales Street, Winchester, into a nursery.
Pitching in with cricket contest. Out of a campaign to stop development on a much-loved Winchester park has come a new cricket competition. Residents fighting the threat to North Walls Park launched the sporting competition last year, and the contest resumed last Sunday. The King Alfred Trophy cricket matches took place at the Damp Recreation Ground in Winchester. Four local teams took part: the Racketeers, St Giles Hill Cricket Club, the Black Boy and the Royal Hampshire County Hospital Cricket Club. Spectators enjoyed four hard-fought and exciting matches. This year's victors were the Racketeers, who reached the required total with two balls left to play. Mike Foulkes, captain of the Racketeers, received the trophy from General Sir Anthony Walker, KCB, chairman of the Save the Wreck campaign group. The campaign group received the welcome news at the end of last year that this location would no longer be considered as an option for the siting of a new leisure centre, rather to rebuild or refurbish the existing River Park Leisure Centre at its current site or create new facilities at Bar End. Sir Tony announced the start of a new campaign to regenerate the cricket pavilion, which is in a sorry state. And as he told the assembled crowd, it should be brought up to a standard that befits the standard of cricket that I have seen played today. Sir Tony, along with fellow campaigner and match organiser Mike Coldwell, plan to launch this campaign in the coming weeks. And there is a photograph with this article of the Racketeers captain, Mike Foulkes, being presented with the trophy, a silver cup, by the Save the Wreck chairman, General Sir Anthony Walker.
Kiel Detached says report on disaster. A yacht disaster that claimed the life of a former Winchester student and three crewmates may have been due to structural weakness in the boat, an official report has said. James Mail, 22, a former Sparshield College student from Rumsey, died along with Andrew Bridge, 22, Steve Warren, 52, and Paul Goslin, 56, after the Cheeky Rafiki capsized in the Atlantic Ocean. The four had been taking part in a regatta in Antigua and were heading back to the Southampton when their vessel capsized about 720 miles east-northeast of Nova Scotia on May the 16th last year. Now a Marine Accident Investigation Branch report has found that the vessel capsized and inverted after its keel detached, which could have been caused by previous groundings and subsequent repairs. The crew were probably fatigued and their performance was impaired, the report reveals. It says, in the absence of survivors and material evidence, the causes of the accident remain a matter of some speculation. However, it is concluded that Cheeky Rafiki capsized and inverted following a detachment of its keel. In the absence of any apparent damage to the hull or rudder, other than that directly associated with keel detachment, it is unlikely that the vessel had struck a submerged object. It is also possible that one or more keel bolts had deteriorated. A consequential loss of strength may have followed movement of the keel, which would have been exacerbated by increased transverse loading through sailing in worsening sea conditions. The US Coast Guard eventually found the upturned hull on May the 23rd. The report added that the yacht's operator, Stormforce Coaching Limited, has made changes to its internal policies and has taken action to prevent a similar incident happening again. The Maritime and Coast Guard Agency, MCA, has undertaken work with the Royal Yachting Association to clarify the requirements for the stowage of inflatable life rafts on yachts like Cheeky Rafiki, and the Yachting Association has drafted enhancements to its Sea Survival Handbook regarding keel failures. The MAIB recommend that the British Marine Federation should cooperate with certifying authorities, manufacturers and repairs to develop best practice and guidance across the industry to deal with hull repairs. It has also been suggested that sporting governing bodies should issue guidance to raise awareness of potential damage to vessels caused by grounding. Friends of James rallied round after the tragedy and raised thousands of pounds for the RNLI's Forever by the Seas Fund in his memory. A team of four lecturers from Sparshield College took on what has been dubbed the toughest canoe race in the world between Devizes and London, raising more than £8,000. And there's a very nice picture of a rather windswept but smiling James Mail with the sea behind him, obviously happy in what he'd been doing.
Mentors needed to help jobless back to work. A new mentoring service helping Winchester's jobless back to work is seeking extra volunteers due to high demand. Winchester District Employment Mentoring launched this year in recognition of challenges facing the unemployed, including family trouble, cultural pressures, lack of skills or low self-esteem. So many have come forward since its launch in February that operating charity SOVA is seeking more helpers. A spokesman for Winchester City Council, which funds the scheme, said volunteers can help change people's lives and make a real difference. By volunteering, you could help someone get their first apprenticeship or give someone who feels they are without prospects the confidence to realise long-held aspirations, he said. No qualification or experience is necessary, but volunteers require commitment, listening and communication skills, and a non-judgmental attitude. The next course takes place on May 15th, 22nd and 29th. To apply, contact Alec Solomon. Call 07980-732-005. I'll repeat that. 07980-732-005. And there's a very nice photograph of six very happy volunteers holding up their certificates.
Thank you, and that concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent, and thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks, of course, to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Tony Bergstrom.
Bye-bye.
And Albie Minns.
Bye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye, and do have an enjoyable week. When you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.